Well, happy Monday, everyone. I'm Pam Stack, your host, and this is Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Hey, how about this? I'm coming back for my first broadcast, and it's going to be with the Anthony Award winner for Best First Novel. In this case, it's Chris Holmes, The Killing Field. Now, The Killing Kind. I'm sorry if you were expecting to hear me at 9 o'clock, but Chris and I decided we were going to kind of shut everything down at 9 o'clock because of those debates. But this is going to be a lot of fun. In case you don't know Chris, he's the author of the Collector Trilogy, which blends crime and fantasy, which I love. The books are fantastic. And the Michael Haskins thrillers. His first Hendrix thriller, The Killing Kind, was also named a New York Times Editor's Choice, a Boston Globe Best Book of 2015, and Strand Magazine's number one book of 2015. Of course, this is the book I'm talking about that won the Anthony Award this year at BoucherCon in New Orleans, which I wasn't able to go to, but darn, I'm so glad Chris won. He also has another book out called Red Right Hand, which I finished reading that not too long ago. Fantastic book. And Dead Harvest, The Wrong Goodbye, and The Big Reap are his trilogy that he wrote. Without further ado, let's talk to Chris Holmes and find out what it was like to win the Anthony. Hi, Chris. Welcome to Authors on the Air. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much for having me.
I'm so glad. And wasn't it smart of me to set up this time, this interview, way before you even went to BoucherCon? I don't even know if we had it set up before the nominations were made or what, but I'm really glad that I'm really glad to be one of the first to speak to you since getting back home. How did it feel to win the Anthony Award for your work?
I'll tell you, it was not an insignificant shock. The field that I was up against was absolutely stacked. Louise Penny has won the award several times.
Yeah.
I was up against Hank Villavue Ryan. I was up against Katrina McPherson, to whom I had lost an Anthony previously for Best Paperback Original a couple of years ago. Matt Coyle is also a terrific writer. So I had privately been handicapping the odds to my friends and saying there was literally no chance that they would call my name. When they actually did call my name, I got about two-thirds of the way out of my chair before I wondered if everybody else in the room heard Louise Penny. I was absolutely just shocked. Thankfully, my wife had encouraged me to write some names down so that I didn't make an idiot out of myself on stage. I'm not sure her plan was successful. There's a chance I did make an idiot out of myself on stage because I swear I don't remember a word of it. But I promise you, it was a pretty exciting moment.
It's a pretty fancy looking little award, and not one that will likely be ever duplicated. That's for sure. What did you do when you sat back down again? And by the way, you said you're not sure if you thanked everyone. You don't remember what you were supposed to say? Because that's what
I remember thanking you and giving you all the credit for making this happen by inviting me on your show beforehand. I mean, obviously that happened.
You didn't. You're so funny. Tell me, were you in shock after that the rest of the evening? Were you able to concentrate on anything?
No, I was completely floored, and the well wishes from everybody afterward. No kidding, it's an overwhelming experience. They always say it's an honor just to be nominated, and thus far in my career I can tell you that's true. Because I've been nominated for a bunch of stuff and rarely ever won. But winning sure doesn't suck, as it turns out.
No, it sure doesn't. Well, congratulations. And not for nothing, but this is not your only, to me, award-winning book. I read Red Right Hand when Mulholland, your publisher, sent me the copy of it through NetGalley and asked if I was interested, and of course I was, and I devoured that book. Tell me about your writing style, Chris, because I have to tell you, while all those other authors are fantastic, and of course I pull Matt out a little bit because he's still one of, you know, the younger writers. I was thrilled that this particular BoucherCon and all the awards that were given out were not necessarily given to the same people year after year. It's a really nice thing to see some of the newer writers in crime fiction getting recognized for their great work. And so I want to know about your writing and why you chose the genre, how it chose you. Tell me a little bit about Chris Helm, the writer.
Well, first of all, I couldn't agree more with you that it was really great to see a new crop of writers on the nominations list. Obviously, you know, seeing the luminaries, the people who were there again and again, is exciting. It's exciting to be on the ballot with them. But, man, there were so many fresh faces represented in this year's nominees. And it was wild. It was wild being in the audience and knowing that, you know, I had friends pitted against friends, and that even if I lost, there was a chance I was going to lose to somebody who was a new voice, and that's really tremendous and very cool.
It really is.
Yeah. As far as what brought me to the genre, I was actually born into a cop family. My grandfather rose from the beat in Syracuse, New York, all the way up to deputy chief. And my mom's entire side of the family is rife with police officers. And they're also avid readers. And they, by and large, read crime fiction, thrillers, mysteries, procedurals. And so I was steeped in that. I was steeped in those mass-market paperbacks that got passed around and dog-eared by the family.
Sure.
And so, you know, in a very real way, you know, I can remember one of the first books I was reading on my own was a Penguin it was like the condensed classic of Edgar Allan Poe's stories. And, you know, I graduated from that to The Real Thing and then to Arthur Conan Doyle. And then from there, you know, it was straight on to the people who, you know, I think are still the luminaries in the crime world today. So I think, you know, you asked about my writing style. I kind of feel like that's my game, is that I'm somebody who's very steeped in the conventions of the genre, and I really like playing with them and upending them and doing things that are maybe a little unexpected.
Well, you certainly do, at least in your books that I've read, and I've read three of them. So I'm impressed with it. I like your voice an awful lot. It's a very strong, it's very original. So that's real important. Did you know always that you wanted to write? Was this going to be your goal, or did you think you'd follow in family footsteps and become a law enforcement officer of some sort?
Neither, actually. It was not my plan to become a writer. You know, my parents were, my dad was one of the first people in his family to go to a 4-year school. My mom's a nurse, and I think they very much saw college, you know, in my future and a practical job. And so I was good in science as a kid, and I think they saw their kid as like, that guy's going to grow up to be a doctor. So when I went to school, I went to school for biology and was pre-med. And after I graduated, I found that I had an interest in microbiology, like infectious disease research. And rather than going to med school, because it turns out I like sleep, I ended up going to a PhD program for microbiology at the University of Virginia. And it wasn't until I kind of felt like that wasn't a great fit for me, that it was one thing I was interested in, but not the only thing I was interested in, that I started to think about writing. And I remember my wife, Katrina, who, you know, saw how miserable I was in grad school, said, well, maybe this isn't the thing for you. What else is it that you would like to do with your life? And I kind of sheepishly told her, you know, I always said I'd one day write a novel. And she was like, maybe you should drop out, get a job and do that. And that's exactly what I did.
Wow. That's a pretty gutsy move to drop out of graduate school. You know, having had such this amazing education and then say, the hell with it, I'm going to go get a job, and I'm sure your job was good, but still, I'm going to go and write a book. That takes some really brass ones to do that, Chris. But, you know, it may have... It may sound pretty simple, but I don't know a lot of people who'd put the brakes on their educational career that far into it to write. So the call must have been great for you. Did your first book get published?
True. Did my first book get published? That's an excellent and complicated question. The short answer is no. The longer answer is it depends on what you call my first book, and then still no. So my first attempt to write a book, the first thing I started writing after I dropped out of grad school, I got about 30 pages in before I realized it was fatally flawed, and then I eventually abandoned it. It was terrible. It'll never see the light of day. And then the thing that I wrote
how did you know it was fatally flawed?
Well, you know, first of all, I had no formal training in writing, and so I was sort of working things out as I went. But the short answer is I started writing a character that was very much like me. I recently did a panel, actually, at DispatcherCon, in which David Corbett talked about how he's a former PI, and he wanted to write a character who was a PI. And when he started out with his first attempt, he basically wrote himself. And then he looked at it and said, you know what, this isn't working. It's very flat on the page. And it was because I think we lack the ability to fully examine ourselves as a character and put ourselves on the page.
Right.
There's too much that's assumed.
Right.
And so I wrote a disaffected grad student who gets embroiled in some sciencey thriller thing. And to be honest, I'm boring on the page is really what it boiled down to. So I thought, okay, you know what, I'm gonna try something completely different. And instead, I wrote a crime novel with some supernatural elements that featured a female protagonist who never left her hometown. She like me, was from a small hometown, but she never left. And she was kind of, her dreams had been thwarted and she was drinking too much. And it was good enough to get me the attention of an agent. And we shopped it around a bunch and there was a lot of interest, but it never saw the light of day. And it was while we were shopping that I wrote Dead Harvest, which was the first of my collector trilogy.
Right. You know, you said you had never taken a writing class or anything. Did you finally take classes to learn the craft? How did you figure out how to write?
No, I never took any classes. First off, when I decided I wanted to get serious about it, I did what any kind of academically minded person would do. I went to the bookstore and I bought like 30 books on writing, and then realized like 28 or 29 of them were just terrible. They didn't have anything for me. I found them kind of paralyzing because the more processy they were, the harder it was for me to see my way through. It was like, you know, 80 days to your first novel and stuff like that. It was miserable.
There were
a couple I found valuable. I think Lawrence Block's Telling Lies for Fun and Profit is terrific because it's very nuts and bolts. Obviously, Stephen King's On Writing is very good. But no, I think by and large, what I started doing was reading more critically. I'm a fairly credulous reader. I get swept up in a story, and I used to not pay attention to how the trick was done. You know, how an author structures the book, how the dialogue plays out. And so I started reading critically and then rereading books I loved and asking why the author made the choices they did. And in fact, if you think about my first trilogy, which sort of blends crime and the fantastic and owes a heavy debt to Dashiell Hammett, Raymond Chandler, Ross McDonald, those guys, to some extent, I was putting my own spin on it, but I was aping a style, and I was aping the rhythms of a detective novel. And I'd hate to say that those were training wheels, because I love those books and I'm proud of them, but it was obvious I was sort of calling my shot, saying, you know, I even borrowed titles, you know, the Big Reap, The Wrong Goodbye. They're all plays on Hammett titles and Chandler titles, Dead Harvest.
Right.
I think it was. I went through an imitative phase, just like anybody else, and I suppose, you know, that continues to this day to some extent. There are always people you admire and who write the sorts of books you want your books to be.
All right, I find your books very refreshing. They're fresh and refreshing. They're very different from, I'm a really huge reader.
Mm-hmm.
We were laughing when we talked about doing the interview tonight, and you were saying, oh, God, we're going to be up against the debates. And I said, not a problem for me. I don't own a TV. But but I got the gist of what you were saying, that. And so we scheduled it a little bit earlier, and so it gives me the opportunity, not owning a television, to be able to read, and especially in the past couple of years, I've just found all of the younger writers who are writing crime fiction and pulp and noir, and boy, I just love it. I am immersed in it. As a matter of fact, I'm actually reading a book right now from an author named Vicki Pedersen, who kind of writes a pulpy supernatural book, and it's really interesting. So I'll let you know how that goes. But it's opened my eyes all over again, because all of those authors you spoke about, like Ross McDonald and everyone before, I read all those books growing up. Those were the touchstone books for me. That's what kicked off my love of reading so much. And it was only later, actually, that I read out of the genre. So I can understand completely. So you wrote these, and these are your title, your covers are very intentional. They're really interesting. They do remind me of picking books off the little spinning wheel that you would get in a farm, like a five and dime someplace.
Mm-hmm.
And I read those books. So I remember them very, very well. So, snaps on whoever did your cover work, because they're really, really great. And
That was credit to Amazing 15 Design, who did that when I was with Angry Robot. The titles for people listening, or the covers rather, for people listening, are made to look like weathered versions of old Penguin classics and Penguin paperbacks, and they're really absolutely beautiful. Although I will say that they've got this weathering that makes them look all beat up. And when I sent a copy of Dead Harvest, my first book, to my mother-in-law, she thought we sent her a beat up, water damaged copy. So I felt bad and also a little sheepish as I explained to her, like, no, that's actually what it looks like. But they are gorgeous. They did a wonderful job, and they've done.
They're really
for
well done, and
yeah,
and you've gotten rave reviews on all of them, on all of your work. So congratulations on that. I have not. Red Right Hand is out now. I have to put my review up. The Killing Kind, I've got my review, I think. Let's talk about The Approach, because this book came out kind of before and doesn't have a lot of talk. We don't talk about it a lot. This is a novella, isn't it?
It's actually just a short story.
Single,
it's about 5,000 words.
It's a short, right?
But it's
because
Mulholland. No, please go ahead.
Go ahead. No. I want to hear your story.
Sure. Mulholland had asked me if I would write something in the Hendrix universe to put out as part of the Kindle single program, which is weird for me. I've never written a short story that takes place in the same world as my novels. The character from The Killing Kind and Red Right Hand actually originated in a short story called The Hitter, which was originally printed in Needle Magazine. But, this idea of, like, bouncing back and doing a smaller story was kind of challenging for me, because I view it a little bit like a tie-in or something for, like when you get those tie-in novels for TV shows or movies or whatever.
Sure.
Because they're not really allowed to advance the character too much. You can't change
right.
the character too drastically, because you can't assume that everybody who reads the books is going to read the short story, and vice versa.
Exactly.
So I came up with this idea to write a story that actually takes place immediately prior to The Killing Kind, because there's a character in The Killing Kind who dies, spoiler alert,
right.
And he's one of my favorite characters to write, and I thought, well, wouldn't it be fun if I got a chance to step back in time and write maybe a lighter, funner crime tale that features this voice, which is exactly what I did. And it became an interesting challenge to me to come up with a compelling reason why that case, why that story never comes up again. And it turns out that it's a secret that Hendrix is keeping at the end of that story. And what's funny is I found that I liked one of the characters that I introduced in The Approach so much that I have a feeling she'll pop up in a later Hendrix novel.
How fun. You said that you generally don't do short stories, but don't you find that doing that type of almost like a writing sprint really get your brain waves moving a little bit and kind of get you in the mood to go ahead and write more? A lot of authors I know write either flash or short stories. I know you've been published in a lot of the online magazines and all. Do you not like writing those just to sharpen your skills? I've always said that someone who can tell me a story in 2,000 words or less really, 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 really needs to continue to write a regular-sized book because it's really hard to do that, to get everything condensed into that short amount of time of words and then have it really be impactful. So go ahead.
Yeah, I actually what I meant specifically was that I don't write a lot of short stories that take place with the same characters and universe as my novels.
I see.
I've actually written a number of short stories.
Okay.
I've written about 30 of them, and I love the form. I don't often use it as sort of a palate cleanser or a writing sprint because I find that, let's say, a flash piece of 500 words, it'd take me a lot longer to write 500 words that are a contained story than it would to write 500 words of a novel. And ditto for a 2,000-word or a 5,000-word short. I find it very labor-intensive, but I also find it very rewarding. The thing about a short story is you can go for broke. You can be emotionally devastating. You can leave no one standing. You can go as dark as you would like. You can go as funny as you would like because the amount of time and attention you're asking of your audience, they're willing to go to some darker places. You can't really do that with a novel. So I feel like shorts are no holds barred. You can really do anything and go anywhere. And I love experimenting in short fiction. The structure that I used in Dead Harvest originally appeared in a short story of mine called 7 Days of Rain, which appeared in Demolition magazine years and years ago. As I said, the character from The Killing Kind appeared in a story called The Hitter. I'm always experimenting with the form sort of in smaller doses to see what works and what doesn't. But I find the past couple of years, I haven't written a lot of short stories because I'm a fairly slow writer and my time has been taken up trying to make sure I get the damn novels done.
The novels, sure. Yeah, you've written for All Due Respect. You've written for Crime Spree. You were in an anthology that Eric Beatner put together, weren't you?
In
Pulp Inc.
Yes, of course.
And who, of course, and he's terrific. I love Beatner. He's great.
He's a great writer.
So you've done a lot of different. Yeah, he really is. And you've done a lot of different things, kind of to keep your creative juices flowing. So the big question now is you've got this wonderful book that has just gotten rave reviews, and you have your follow-up book, you have Red Right Hand. What's next on your to-be-done list? Are you writing another book, or are you stepping back and taking a break?
I confess, I did step back and take a break for a little while after Red Right Hand because when I initially signed with Mulholland, there was a two-book deal, and I thought maybe a standalone would be the next thing, and I'd geared up to do some work on a standalone novel, and then the early buzz on The Killing Kind turned out so good that they said, look, I know you were planning on writing a sequel to The Killing Kind. Strategically, that might be a good book to come out with next. And so I dropped everything and wrote Red Right Hand, which was always my intent. I just didn't think it would be next up on the docket. And that proved to be a really grueling process to whip that book into shape. And I'm very proud of how it turned out, but it was
magnificent.
I think the toughest thing I've ever written. It was emotionally draining because, I was living in a headspace where the book takes place in the aftermath of a major terrorist attack. And it's also a fairly complex plot. I was juggling a lot of things.
It's a very complex plot, by the way. By the way, thank you very much. It is a terrifically complex plot. And there's not this pat, neat, little tied-up-in-a-ribbon resolution with it either, which I really appreciated, too. I was constantly surprised by what I read. It was just an excellent book, an excellent
thank
book.
Thank you so
I
much.
I can't recommend it highly enough. You're welcome.
Yeah, and, that's something I was interested in, too, is that juggling of making sure that an ending satisfies without feeling pat or cheap or as if, you know, and also leaving the storyline open for future books. When I finished that, I did take a step back and, you know, started thinking seriously about my next project. I wrote a couple of short stories. One of them was The Approach. The other one is a horror story that will be coming out in an anthology next year. And only in the past couple of months have I turned my efforts seriously to the next book, which I won't say much about because not anybody except for my wife and my agent know about it yet. But it's going to be a standalone. It's going to be pretty big and ambitious, and I'm excited about it.
Well, I hope that Mulholland, you know, Little Brown and Company and all of those people are smart enough to sign you on. Hold on just one second. We've got a caller. I already know who it is. Hi, congratulations on your nomination. How are you today?
This is Matt? In the St. Louis hotel room.
How's it going, Matt?
See, I always know when it's Matt. That's what I was saying. I'm sorry I missed you this year, doggone it. You know, I had so planned for us to have a chat together, but you know, just didn't work out like that. And but congratulations on the nomination. You know, as an avid reader from all of you guys, it's really hard for me to say, oh, I'm cheering for so and so, because I like all your work. You know, I really love all the work. So, I know you both will be up there again. So let me introduce you. This is Matt Coyle, who is also an award-winning author himself, who was, again, nominated this year for an Anthony. Matt, go ahead. What's on your mind, my friend? How are you?
Well, I had a couple things. First of all, I wanted to see how you were feeling, Pam.
I'm much better, thank you. Yeah, I'm actually walking without assistance now, so thank you. Yeah, yes, I'm almost 3 weeks post-surgery, so it's pretty good. Thank you. I appreciate that.
And I wanted to congratulate Chris again. As the, I think I was one of the BoucherCon Susan Lucci Award winners this year.
Because
I lost two awards, but you know, it is an honor just to be nominated. That's what my agent kept telling me. That I told her to give me a week, but I've been listening. And I'm listening to Chris, and I didn't really know Chris. And of course, we're friends on Facebook from way back, but I didn't really know Chris until I met him briefly at BoucherCon when we were handicapping the Anthony Award.
Yep,
and each telling the other that we had no. That, one of us, you know, we had no chance, and of course he was lying, but but you know, I'm listening to this guy and he's really smart. He's a nice guy, obviously. I haven't read his book, but
yep.
A lot of people I really respect, yourself included, Pam, tell me it's a great book.
Thanks.
But he's really smart too.
Yeah.
And I'm listening to him talk and think, yeah, yeah, the grad's going on with stuff. Smart guy and a really enjoyable show. And he mentioned the Lawrence Block book. I had that book too when I was learning how to write, and you know, of course, Fred Chandler and Hammett and McDonald. But there are a lot of things in common, which I thought was interesting. But it's a really good show. It's a really good writing talk. I'm really enjoying it. But I just wanted to call and say hello to Pam and Chris, and that was it.
Cause
I'm in St. Louis on my day job in a hotel room, so I had nothing else to do. But of course, I listened to anyone.
God. So, listen, Matt, I'll be in touch with you soon because I need to get you back on with your new book. I love the new book. It's wonderful. So we need to talk about that because, boy, this one really gets to even. I didn't think he could get darker. And this one really is, wow. Wow. So, you know, I'm a huge fan of Matt and his publisher. And so I'm always blessed to get the galleys pretty early on. And Matt knows I started reading it a long time ago. But let's keep in touch. Enjoy your day job. I'm so glad you called in. And congrats again, Susan Lucci. But, you know, it won't be that long. You have won awards, and you are a terrific writer. Thanks for calling in, Matt.
Oh. Thanks. I want to say one other thing because you mentioned it early. You actually You called me a young writer, and it's nice to be called young for something. I really appreciated that when you said that earlier than that.
Well, but you know, in this genre, in this, I do consider you one of the newer writers in this. I mean, this has you are new to this genre. And
I like young better,
and
but I'll go with newer.
Yeah, but you are one of the young writers, as far as I'm concerned. And so for those of you listening, if you've not read any of the Rick Cahill books that Matt writes about, you really got to go and get them because they are terrific. There's some really good writing there, and I think you'll enjoy it. Thanks so much, Matt, and have a great evening.
Thank you. You bet.
Okay,
I'm going to listen to the rest of the show. And then congrats to Chris again. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So, so Chris, you know, Matt brought it up again, too, that you mentioned Lawrence Block's book and Stephen King, and I've done 1,000 author interviews, and I bet that almost every single one who talk about reading books on writing mention those two books specifically as being the best, and the other one is one written by William Goldman, I think, and it was on writing and screenplays and the importance of if you know how to do both. So interesting that you said that. If you don't mind playing just a few minutes doing Final Five with me, which is 5 quick questions and 5 quick answers, I'd like to find out a little bit more about you. I don't know if you're watching the debates, and really I don't care. I'll keep you on as long as I want. But But
you might be doing me a favor if you just filibuster straight through the debates.
There you go. I think everybody should talk books instead of debate. So, or debate books, as a matter of fact. So, whose book is on your nightstand? Who are you reading?
Oh gosh, that's a great question. I have a nasty habit of reading many books at once, but currently. I am reading an arc of The Last Place You Look by Kristen Lepianka, which is terrific so far. I'll tell you exactly how far I am, about 50 pages in, and it's excellent so far. And I'm also reading a bound manuscript, it's not even an arc yet, called Here and Gone by Halen Beck, that thus far is absolutely riveting. I picked it up at BoucherCon. It was handed directly to me by the author him or herself. That is about all I will say of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it is an absolutely riveting thriller. I think it's coming out next year, and I think it's going to make a big splash.
Excellent. If you were going to sit down to have a conversation with any writer about writing, who would you want to sit down and talk to? Who would you want
any
to be
any writer living
by?
Or dead? Oh, my gosh.
No, any
that's
writer living. I can't make the dead come to life. Let's do any living writer who you would want to have a discussion, a tutorial on writing. Who would you want to talk to?
A tutorial on writing. Donna Tartt, because I think her sentence-level writing is about as beautiful as you could hope for, and her skill set is so far from my own that I would love to pick her brain.
Interesting. Goldfinch. Huh, very good. Do you want to write outside your genre? And if so, what do you want to write?
Oh, God, absolutely. I want to write. I consider myself a genre writer, first and foremost.
Right.
I think I'm happy to play in just about any genre. I don't see myself writing a literary novel just because I think I would be terrible at it. I similarly don't see myself writing a romance novel or a Western because I would be terrible at them. But I happily play in fantasy, in science fiction, in crime, in horror, pretty much any genre sandbox. I'm all for it.
Oh, cool. That's great. I love that. I love it when writers move out of their comfort zone and go into another genre. That, for a reader, is a lot of fun, I will tell you that. So prior to you becoming making your decision to write, you were a medical school student. You were in graduate school, and you had to take a job. Do you mind telling us what kind of job you had to take, what you ended up doing?
Sure. I was a lab tech for a marine biotech company on the Portland waterfront.
Oh, okay. Interesting, interesting.
Yeah, so I guess
you
I was technically
kind of the Doc
a marine
Ford
biologist.
Guy, right? You were a Doc Ford. You were a Doc Ford. you know, Randy Wayne White, who is on this coast, who is on my coast. Interesting. Is the best yet to come, and are you scared?
I think as a writer, you have to believe the best is yet to come. I think you have to think the thing that you're working on is going to be the best thing you've ever written, or there's no point doing it. And yes, that's scary because you could easily be wrong. It's even scarier because you could easily be right.
How about that? Chris Holm, congratulations on winning the Anthony Award for Best First Novel. I'm so honored that you decided to come on the show tonight and spend some time talking to me. You have no idea how happy I am that I got a chance to meet you over the internet, essentially. Will you please come back one day and talk to me again?
It's my pleasure. I'd be happy to.
And maybe even you'll come back and I'll set up an interview between you and Donna Tartt. If I could do that, would you come back?
Of course I would. I wouldn't miss it.
Okay, so not me interviewing both of you, you interviewing her.
That'd be a terrifying proposition, but I would do it.
You know, I ask, so I'm giving you fair warning, right? Okay, Chris Holm, the Anthony Award-winning author of The Killing Kind. Go now, get that book if you haven't, and please go get Red Right Hand. It's so good. Oh, my gosh, what an incredible story. I promise you, you're going to love him. But, Chris, will we see your character again, do you think?
Absolutely, I think so. I as long as people keep reading Michael Hendricks, I think I'll keep writing him.
Okay, good. I'm glad to hear that. Have a great evening. Thank you so much. Continued success. And we'll talk soon, okay?
You too. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chris. Good night. And that's it for tonight. I am introducing debut novelist Kate Pilarczyk on Wednesday evening with The Damp Fedora, her novella. I can't wait for you to speak to Kate. She's so much fun. Be here, 9 o'clock, and have a great evening, everyone. Thank you for hanging around till I got back from my medical leave. Have a great night. Bye. Thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.